Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Apolog Podcast, episode number 72. This episode is brought to you by FetchClass.com. FetchClass.com is a teaching and learning system where you can teach and be taught in a video conference one-on-one. It's free to join. It's better than driving across town. It's a place for you to go learn stuff and a good place for teachers to go teach stuff. For more information, go to FetchClass.com. Also brought to you by InsightRecorders.com. Go check out the store and the rates that are there. If you want to come record, that's great. But if you want to have a mix done and you've already have a recording done, you want to make it sound awesome, send it to InsightRecorders.com. Go to InsightRecorders.com for more information. Affiliate programs. First one, Banggood.com. Banggood.com is a place, I can't really describe it, but it sells everything. Anything and everything. It sort of ships in from overseas. It takes a while to get here, but my goodness, you can get great deals. Banggood.com. But what you need to do is go to the apolog.ca front page and click on the banner, the Banggood banner. Bookmark the banner. Help and support the show. Also, you can do the same thing with Musician's Friend. The banner is on the right side. Apolog.ca. Click on the Musician's Friend. I might drop Musician's Friend. I don't see a lot of people clicking on that. If you want to do, well, you know, it's kind of typical for musicians. You're all kind of lazy. I'm just saying. Amazon.com. Go to apolog.ca, click on the Amazon banner, whether you're from Canada, America, or the United Kingdom. Bookmark that banner. That's important. Shop and support the show. Costs you no extra money. It's a place, you know Amazon. Amazon, it'll show up the next day. When they get those drones, those helicoptery things that can come and drop it off at your front door within half an hour, that's the world. The world is completely changed at that point. Don't forget to go to the Apolog shop. apolog.ca/shop. There, you can pre-order my acoustic album. You can buy a t-shirt. If you live in the Durham region of Canada, Ontario, I will drop it off at your house. Also, you can buy the whole Foursquare discography there for $20. It's over 50 songs. I actually forget. I should probably have a count on how many songs it is, but I know it's over 50. Patreon.com/Apolog is a place to pledge a monthly amount to the show. You can pledge as little or as much as you want. You can cancel at any time. And what this small amount, up to $2 a month, can actually support me with my gas fees, with hosting fees on this website that I host this show on. I have two amazing patrons, and that's Michael Pitts and Curtis Pippin. And I'll find another Hobbit joke, believe me, but I'm not going to say it this week. If you want to like the show, go to facebook.com/apologpod. Follow me at SimonHead666 on Twitter. Go to iTunes. This is important. I don't know why I always keep this to the very end, but if you go to iTunes, please subscribe, rate, and review the show. 5 stars is always welcome. And that helps the show's place where it sits in, puts more eyes on it. If the more likes, the more it's going to put it up to the top. It's very important to the show's success. Please go there and like that show. That'd be great. Today's guest is Darren Dumas from the band The Salads. Also, he's a graphic designer. He's a dad. He lives in Stratford, Ontario now, home of the Biebs. We're not really homes. He is a very, very cool, honest, down-to-earth person that I've known for going on 15 years. He's always been the same person. And one day we'll hear our Huey Lewis in the newest sports album that we started recording about 5 years ago. But everybody, please, please, please have fun listening to this little extra long version of the podcast. Darren Dumas from the band The Salads on the Apolog Podcast. So how you been, Darren?
Good.
Yeah.
I've been good, Simon. I've been good, man. It's good to see you. Good to chat with you.
Absolutely. I've been a long time.
It's been a while. Yeah. We haven't had a chance to catch up. I sort of feel that way with a lot of people since I moved from Toronto to back to my hometown in Stratford like a year and a half ago or something.
Oh, so when we played with you in the when I played with you in the Fairmounts, it, you had probably just had moved back at that point.
I
huh?
had just moved back. That's right.
Yeah. What's life like in the small town of Stratford? What's it like?
It's good, man.
Yeah.
It's real good. You know what? Growing up here, I didn't think I'd move back.
Yeah.
It's and coming back, it sounds like a stereotypical story. It's a common, there's a common thread with a lot of people my age where they did the same thing. Mm-hmm. They kind of said, I'm getting out of here, I'm never coming back.
Yeah.
And then they come back and they're happy they did, and they see the city in a different light. And the different light that I'm seeing it in is just being able to appreciate more of the creative minds that live here right now and have settled here, and people my age, young entrepreneurs starting up new businesses. There's a ton of them.
Really?
And just a lot of actors and artists and musicians of all kinds. It's really cool, man.
Well, Stratford's always kind of known for the Stratford Festival, the Shakespeare Festival that happens every... I know a lot of people that come out there, not to act, but to work, out there. And it's pretty prominent. It's weird, a little town like that. Do you know what the history is of why Stratford became that Shakespeare Festival kind of thing?
I don't. And I wish I could tell you more about it, but I don't. I'm sure as I get older, I'll learn more about the city that I didn't care about when I was a kid. Stratford's a weird place growing up because, as you mentioned, because of the festival, it's such a tourist attraction. And during that season, it's a completely different city from when that season's not happening. And for locals, particularly local kids, they're like, you're sort of pushed to the outskirts during the festival, like, get out, don't let the tourists see your dirty ass. You have got to create your own entertainment. It created a lot of creative people. Mm. I remember putting on shows, and like we brought the first hip hop show into Stratford from some acts from Toronto, but had to rent a private school's gymnasium that had entrance off the street and get fundraising from the United Way to be able to pull all this stuff off. And kids aren't going that distance anymore these days. They're different. They're iPad, iPhone, drones, for lack of, you know, better comparison. They're just a different breed of humans. Maybe in my perspective on it, or just that's the reality because of technology and how humanity has progressed or digressed since I was a kid.
I think that the problem with this technology of knowing everything all the time, it stops your imagination from going to the possibilities of what if I did this? What if I could do that? It's the internet grounds people to almost to a negative part where they look like, I'll never get out of this town, or there's so much to see, I'm just going to leave this town. But there's always that limiting sort of thing of like your imagination is all put right in the palm of your hand now.
Yeah.
Where before, like 20, 30 years ago, you would think, oh, I'm going to go out and hang out by the river and do stuff, you know.
Play hockey. Exactly. So we kind of hear our skateboard, whatever it was, right?
And kids still do that stuff. I mean, it's a phase. Like you have a children or a child?
Child.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. He's 8 now.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah,
it'll be 9 this year.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
So do you have rules for your son, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have rules that sometimes you think, well, if I was his age, I'd say screw off, dad? Or
maybe the typical parental rules, but I don't know. Again, same as kids are different now, parents are different now too.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I don't know, even just the simple parents have tattoos now. It's that movie, the F word was great.
Oh, yeah.
You know that one?
Yeah. All the punk rock dads, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a different generations, and we have different things. I don't know. Like, to me, shit's not a bad word around the house, but bitch is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reverse on TV.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know.
True. You know, it's tough. It's tough to not sound like the old guy, but you're right. There are some...
There are
some things, though, like, I don't know if you... Socially, I don't know about your community, but my community... There's a lot of sort of like, there's not a lot of punk rock dads living in my town.
Okay.
There's a lot of like banker dads, and there's a lot of like normal dads. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if there are artistic dads, I haven't really met them yet, But it's kind of like a normal town, even though Uxbridge, my town, is kind of known for art and cultures, not as much as Stratford, but it's kind of the place that's close enough to Toronto where you can still live here and do things. But there's sort of like the normal dad is the type of dad. I haven't met anybody who's normal dad that I think, I think I could hang with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough, totally. Huh?
No, there's a lot. And I find there's a lot more dads that I can hang out with here.
Yeah.
There are a lot of musicians and just cool dudes kind of thing. But in the same respect, there's a lot of that we're also in like a, you know, conservative belt. So there's a lot of straight laced banker dudes, your typical normal dads, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, when I meet normal dads, I kind of feel, first of all, I feel awkward because I think this person either thinks I'm a complete flake or a weirdo. or it's the other way around where they look at you like, whoa, you used to play in a band? Like, that's heavy stuff, man. That's really cool, you know? So there's that feeling of equal awkwardness where you're like, well, yeah, don't put me on a pedestal because playing in a punk rock band isn't glamorous or glorious, you know? It was a tough road, right? It's a long way to get to where we are, just being sitting in our living rooms or our basements or whatever and talking because... Yeah, like you had a long run with that. The salad's still going, right?
Yeah, and I certainly felt that same kind of thing coming back into town for like because we were still playing and predominantly playing shows around town because I didn't want to travel too far and the guys and so they were either Toronto or Stratford or London. We'd stick around home to play gigs, you know, it's easier to do. I've had the same thing, starting to mingle with other dads and some are Big Salads fans or like, wow. And again, putting you up on a pedestal and you're like, no, that's not, you know, go so far just yet. I certainly had a hell of a lot of fun and there still is a lot of fun to be had and that we're having, but, it's different.
Well, see, I knew you in the salads in the heyday, and I know you now. But I never thought anybody in the salads, any of you, had any sort of like, I don't know, standoffish kind of tendencies. There was shy members there's shy members in your group, and you know. But there's I've met you when you're like I said the salads and when they were off and running, and then I see you a salad, and it's like we're still. You're the same person, man. So
thanks, man. Cheers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's a tough thing to do.
I've changed a lot since still, I feel. But yeah, my values and the type of person that I genuinely am is still the same.
Yeah. Do you think being a nice guy in rock and roll is – it's a good trait to have because you end up meeting the same people all the time. And because Canada's so small, everybody knows each other as well as everybody's traits, you know? So if you're a dick in this country, people generally find out quite fast.
For sure. It's a Canadian thing, I think. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. The dicks are bad, but not, worse elsewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're all pretty tolerable.
Have you ever had like the... Anybody, like any other bands, just take you to the point where you feel like, oh my God, I'm turning into these people? Like, I know I have.
How do you mean? In a
bad way, negative way.
In a bad way. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's one time where I publicly was like, fuck this band. And then like, woo, what, you know, why did I? Because a band that was on our sort of circuit that we had done some shows with before. I was just fed up with everything I was seeing and just too deep into the, just got too caught up into the music industry and the politics of it all, I think at the time and then had to go, oh, I'm not going to do that again. Not that anything bad happened from it, but I was just like, I didn't need to socially be like, fuck these guys thing.
There's a fine line between standing up for what is right and also taking a position where people can hear you and hear your message and use it. To abuse that is a lot of, you know, we know people out there who have abused that power.
Right.
And it never works out good. It never turns out good at all.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. You never want to sort of slump into the, shitty game that other people play and play that same game.
Yeah.
That sort of,
yeah,
whatever.
And, yeah. And the Salads have been a band that it's 20 years now, right? How long has this been?
Shit. The first recording with me was in 99.
Okay.
Or an EP.
Right.
But they had released a full length record the year before and a cassette tape the year or year before that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And those were the first releases. So since then, yeah.
What did you do before then? Like, were you in bands as well?
The Salads found me in a band that I was in for exactly a year. That just started with some guys jamming at a weekly thing at a bar downtown. They were just playing some funk sort of hip hop white boy thing. And I was writing poems and digging a lot of hip hop at the time. And I knew a few classic tunes that I would come up and jam with them and then start doing some of my own original stuff. And then because we were doing this weekly, songs were created and crowd people that would come out weekly liked certain songs. And were like, let's lay down a cassette. Record a cassette tape, met some other people in the industry, like the Circle Research guys who did some turntable stuff on our recording, and then just got caught up and meeting some other artists doing shows. And that's where we met the Salads on a bill at Club Shanghai.
Ooh.
We played together, and my band Chronic opened up for the Salads. And another band called Big Fatty played. Mm-hmm. You can see the common thread in band names. There was a theme to the night.
Yeah.
And the Salads at that time, they had just released a full record, and the industry people that they were putting this record out to kept telling them, the record's great, but you're all doing vocals. There's no lead singer. You need a lead frontman. So they were kind of all on the search for a frontman. And saw me perform with my band, who was, again, not too serious, but just having fun with what we were doing. And one guy was about to go off to teach English in Japan. And so we were splitting up anyways, and the Salads at that particular show all at the same time were like, you thinking what I'm thinking? Look at this guy. Like, mm-hmm. Let's give him a try. And didn't have any auditions for anybody else and just brought me in. And that's how it happened. We started writing songs like Get Loose and Roth Kung Fu and the whole Full Day to Be record, and it just kind of snowballed from there.
And so, and it moved fast too, right? Like people that were interested in your band were to get something going for sure, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. EMI jumped in first, so we had Full Day to Be out on that, and then Big Picture. Big Picture, we were in 2006. We were with Warner Brothers. And like all through subsidiary, other smaller labels.
The death of the music industry. You survived the death of the music industry.
We did, yeah. We were right at the end of it.
It's your fault, Darren. You wrecked the industry.
Well, you know, it's funny just thinking back on how I met the guys. Even do you remember a band called Bad Blood?
Yeah, oh yeah. I recorded Yet Another Posse. I was their producer.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so my introduction to them starts way back then when I first moved to Toronto to go to school for graphic design at George Brown. Started seeing bands, caught on to Bad Blood, really loved seeing them. They were playing regularly with a bunch of other cool bands. Mm-hmm. Fence.
Oh,
Who turned into Twinfold. Yeah. The whole Toronto hardcore scene, it was a blast. A band called Race that played a lot with them as well, too, that was from Hamilton, Burlington, had like a Jamaican lead singer doing hardcore type stuff. Loved all that stuff, but Bad Blood in particular, and really became good friends with those guys. Went on tour with them as like a roadie to when they played CBGBs.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah. We stayed at Richie, the original bass player from Sick of It All's place in New York, and just like, really got in with these guys. And then started working with Jesse, the bass player in Bad Blood. He had a music, like marketing,
publicist
company,
yeah.
And I started doing a lot of graphic design work for them.
Okay,
They were promoting the Salads' first record at that time. So Bad Blood played a show at the El Macombo with the Salads opening up. I happened to go because I'm like, oh, there's a funky band opening up for my friends in Bad Blood. Great. Mm-hmm. And I had this band Chronic at that time. Was like, oh, hey, the Salads could play a show with my band. And made friends with them, and yeah, so all that started.
Yeah, I've known Bill Gregory, gosh, since the like 1990.
Yeah, those are my brothers. Love those guys.
Yeah, and Jeremy was in Voodoo Chicken, a band out of Oshawa.
Yeah.
And and Jason King ended up joining Trigger Happy for a brief stint. So that's sort of around that late 90s era of things where things were really, everybody seemed to be doing something. And it was always positive. It was
a really positive, amazing. It's different now. I don't want to sound like a old codger. I keep doing that, but like, those are the days. But you can't walk into the Elmo and see that sort of thing these days. I'm sure it's a different venue or venues.
I think like, there is. I think there's a resurgence of small independent venues within Toronto, I know for sure, because there's no way. Like, I was booked to do the show at this place called The Cage, which closed.
Yeah.
It closed down, and that place was awesome until it closed. And then I made one or two emails to a couple of places, and then I got an actual reply from this place, The Central, who also, I think they're somehow involved with the Smiling Buddha Cafe.
Okay.
There's some sort of tie in there, but they are really into a community kind of like thing. You know, I want to feel that there's still community. It's just smaller and it's more select, but it's there. You know what I mean? I still want to say I have that, you know, because if I think it's not there, then I'll be just upset because I remember what it was like and I don't want to be that guy that said, remember what
I
it was like?
That's what I'm saying. But yeah, things are bound to change and let's just hope for the better.
Well, everything goes in circles, right? You're right. You know, you're right. You can only hope and put positive vibes that way. Otherwise, you'll just be an upset, angry curmudgeon that
old grumpy codger.
Yeah. You know, I just started a new job last month and I'm the oldest guy there, you know, that try to find yourself and catch yourself like, well, I've been mixing bands since you were born. You know what I mean? Like,
oh man, I work in a small office here in Stratford.
Yeah,
doing like my first 9 to 5 in forever, but I love it. I'm doing graphic design and print work and signage stuff for a lot of local businesses. And
oh, cool!
Meeting a ton of people and the place that I work at is called Trench Marketing, and it's just my boss and his wife, and then this younger girl who's in her mid-20s. They're all great. It's a lot of fun, but I'm with the younger girl most of the time. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. Even just, she was born in the 90s. I'm like, and she's in her mid 20s. So
right.
We can communicate and have some things in common. But when you start talking music, like, I'm like, I mentioned DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince once. I'm like, oh, you know, like, the tune was Parents Just Don't Understand. She's like, what?
I never heard it.
Oh,
well, yeah. You wouldn't been born.
Like, you know, the Fresh Prince and Will Smith. And
Will Smith. Yeah, the actor. Yeah, that guy.
Men in Black.
Yeah, the guy that made you look into the little light, you know, that hypnotized you. He sang?
So, those moments, there's been a lot of those moments, mm-hmm. you know. Oh, remember that?
Yeah. I had a moment with, at my old job, I wrote this theme song for a kids show that came out in 2003.
Okay.
And I was mentioning the name of the show, and the kid was on ClearCom with me, goes, I used to watch that every day before when I came home from school. It's like, because to me, it didn't seem that long ago, right? But him, he was like 10 years old when that song came out, right?
Yeah.
And here he is in university learning, you know, how to be a technician. And he had this moment of like, holy crap, you wrote that song. You know, it was like these moments of, holy shit, that's right, you know? Yeah.
Age is a funky thing. I had the same moments.
Yeah.
Same moments with her. And she's like, oh, Get Loose, that's your song.
Oh, I saw. Yeah,
I was. Yeah, and I was. You know, getting it, just going into high school or something. Oh shit.
Yeah. I mean, like those late '90s years, they were special times. Though they were special times because a lot of people were. You're about the same age as me, and that's sort of like the going from late 20s into early 30s or whatever. That's, you know, that's a special time, right?
Because it is a special time.
You're
absolutely
crossing this boundary of no longer being, you know, a kid. Now you're becoming, you have to become an adult.
Yeah.
And to be able to hold on to your younger self, I can handle it now more, but I remember being 27 going, oh my God, I'm going to be 30. Like, I'm going to be 30. My life is over. Like, my life is completely over. And now that I'm 45, it's like, I know what it's like. I feel like I'm 20 again, you know, and I'm okay with it. And I'm okay with that stuff.
See, I'm easing up on 40 in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a funny one to me. How'd you deal with that?
I was awesome.
Did you go in it more comfortably than you did when you were into your 30s?
Absolutely. When I turned 27, I felt depressed. I thought, that's it. I've got as far as I could go. And then it turns out that when I was 32, I was making more, I was doing more musically than I was when I was in my early 20s. I was putting out albums. I was going on tour. I was playing in a band that actually could go out and play shows in front of people.
Yeah.
So once I turned 30, it was okay. And then early 30s into mid 30s, I don't even remember really. And then, not for that reason, but nothing really groundbreaking, right? And then turning 40 was like, oh, cool, I'm 40, you know. Maybe 50 will be different, you know.
maybe you're right. Yeah, that feels right. I feel like when I was a kid, 40 was more of a milestone than 30. 30 to me as a kid was like the lost decade.
Okay, yeah.
You know, teens are pretty prominent, 20s are pretty important. I was like, what's going on with the 30s? 40s is like over the hill.
Yeah. You still
Do
you still feel that way, or is that a?
No, I don't know. Now that I'm like nearing the end of my 30s, it was pretty pivotal. I started a family and bought a house and all those kind of big monumental sort of things.
Yeah.
And I feel like the leaves that would be turned, if any, in my 40s are going to be really cool. I'm excited. It's a lot of new versions of what I've been doing already. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think once you get older, you get more comfortable. I hope you would get more comfortable with yourself. That's sort of where I feel that. And then it's not like I'm not going to be as big as Bon Jovi letdown feeling, because my whole life being in punk bands never led me up to the part of, and no one ever told me, you're going to be as big as the stars, kid. You know, there was all, you know, it was like, just keep working and things will work out. Like, you know, and did you ever feel like when people were like, when you had all these labels behind you, did you feel a lot of stress to actually have to go out and be like big? Like, is this a thing? Was this your,
Oh, big time. Yeah. Big time. That was it. That was the hardest part of it all, I'd say. It was just trying to live up to everybody else's expectations of what you should be writing, what you should be looking like, how you should act in interviews, or just under the microscope for sure. After we put out Full Day to Be and Get Loose, the singles like Get Loose and Rock Kung Fu were successful. Of course, all they wanted to hear for the next record, for the sophomore, was
more of that.
A whole record of that.
Mm-hmm.
And all that made us want to do was the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, we were all just like seeing all of our other friends being really successful, guys like Billy Talent and, just a bunch of other bands doing more straight rock stuff at that time, like the mid 2000s, around 2004, 2005, 2006 sort of thing. It was like really rock radio heavy. Rock stuff was coming out of Canada, 3 Days Grace and all that sort of heavy stuff, and seeing that stuff live and playing live, being our main bread and butter, like, and what we, the main center point behind everything we do was playing live and bring it to the stage, and heavy, loud riffs was what sounded good to us and what seemed like the audience was digging. So we were like, fuck this album of straight Get Loose songs, let's do a serious rock record, because we're pissed off at the industry. We were falling out with our management and our label at the time. We were getting married and starting families and having kids more serious shit, people dying, and just like really, like, we took all that energy and wrote a serious rock record,
right?
Yeah. Which was mildly successful. Mm-hmm. Had a couple tunes off of it that were successful, but not like the previous one. and it wasn't the record that they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
But you know, it was what it was because of that, what they were pushing for. That's the record that we were able to give them. Had there not been that pushing, would we have done a record that was all sort of more Get Looses, like the one we just put out? Do you know what I mean? That was more of just fun and you know, a couple serious numbers here and there, but ultimately just a fun record.
Yeah. I think that was the time too that a lot of bands being signed were under the age of like 20. It seemed like to me like they were signing kids because for one reason particularly.
Our age was always an issue too. We were in our mid-20s at the time. But
too
that
old.
Was old.
Too old.
That was too old. So yeah, hide it.
You're not being Jedis. You're not.
Yeah, you know what, Simon? One thing that I've come a whole lot more comfortable with is just being who you are and accepting that. That can be because maybe it's because of such a past of hiding your age, even when we were young. Like looking back on it and thinking they're telling us how old we were when we were in our mid-20s, it's like, it's such a weird thing, but that we played into that for the longest time and would hide our age and all this sort of stuff. And now I'm proud of it. Now I love all these grays that are popping up in my head. I don't care.
I think that people get better at writing songs when they get older.
Yeah, no doubt.
It is a well-known fact. You know, do you think Avril wrote Complicated? No.
No.
It was some 40-year-old dude and another 40-year-old dude, you know, what are they called? The Matrix or something. They wrote that song, and old people make that song popular. Popular. Mm-hmm. I never thought you could add a syllable on complicated, too, by the way. But,
make it more complicated.
Complicated. Why does he have to make things so complicated? But the whole idea that children should be our future, that children are the future of the music industry, and there's this other bullshit going around that let's make only, like, you know, with you needed a lead singer. But it was when it was bands like Treble Charger, they wanted one lead singer. Jimmy Eat World, one lead singer, not two. All these bands started having to have to, like, well, who's going to sing? Jimmy Eat World had two lead singers in the band, and they had to make a decision who's going to be the lead singer, and they made the decision. But then Blink-182 came out, and they had two singers. And then all of a sudden, the industry went, it's okay, you can have two singers. And that kind of, like, propelled the music industry into like, let's make bands with two singers in it, because Blink-182, they always try to recreate the magic that was created once by complete accident.
Yes, exactly. And with honesty and realness, you know what I mean?
And I want to think that people now have a better filter of what honesty is, even though when they watch YouTube videos, it's one person sitting and talking in front of a camera. I can understand that person, whether I believe in them or not, you know, and podcasts and things like this. Like I think we're in a life now that people can appreciate honesty a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah.
I want to say that because maybe it's the age demographic because I don't listen to radio anymore. I don't.
Maybe it's the video era now where everybody's trying to figure out what's real and what's not real.
That's right.
Because everyone has believed something that's fake.
Mm-hmm.
That's been on video at some point in time, and you're like, oh, no one's going to get me now. So you always try. And then when you see something that's real, you have that much more appreciation for it. It goes viral, and you're on Ellen.
That's right. And I know who you're talking about, five people on one guitar.
You know, and so many other people. That's what so many of those shows survive on, is people's appreciation of honesty in weird places.
Definitely. You're mentioning Walk Off the Earth, you know, and they were on Ellen. I saw a live show of theirs.
Right.
And I was completely blown away.
Yeah, yeah.
What a show. My God. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I love what that band has become. It's great. I remember that we had played a bunch of shows with them well before Sarah even joined the band.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, this is a funny connection to that time of pretending who you are and hiding your age and your situation. They would come to the show loading in their own gear in costume.
Oh, really?
And we're like, what are they doing? And it was kind of half funny, half like they're hiding their faces and then come back leave the venue and come back out of costume. Oh yeah, Brody's brought our gear in.
Well, they might have it. They might have it figured out, you know? Like,
yeah, it was funny.
Because everything they do is always seemed like there was a motive behind what they were doing. Their live show was unbelievable. It was so well. It was scripted, you know what I mean? Yes. Like, it was the same show they did the night before.
Yeah.
But what a show. Oh, my God.
That's great, man. It's fantastic. I love the thought that's put behind it. It's a great, great thought-out beast.
I truly think that Gianni is a genius, too. I think he is an absolute genius.
He's great. He's a super clever dude, man.
Yeah. I've never met him in person. I am pandering a little because I would like to get at least one member of Walk Off the Earth on this show.
I totally should.
Yeah.
Maybe I can connect you guys.
I would love that. Because I met them real fast in Winnipeg because I did a band that I was working for, opened up for them, played during the day, and then they played right before Zac Brown Band. And I saw one of them, and I'm like, you guys are really great. And he seems so honestly, hey, thanks. You know, it's just like, you know what it's like, right? You meet people that you kind of look up to, and you think, this guy can either be a complete dick or really cool. Yeah. And I was so happy that they were just cool people, you know?
Yeah, they're totally cool people and good guys. What the hell's that? Oh, that's the phone that I don't answer.
Oh, really? Did you win a cruise?
No, man. Yeah. Are you kidding? I'm for real. I'm against home phones.
Good for you.
Doesn't make any sense. You got a cell phone. Why should we have a home phone?
But anyways, I know. Yeah.
Two people call our home phone. Nobody else knows. Nobody that I like am friends with or whatever even knows the home phone because I don't answer it.
The only people that call our home phone is people that want to sell us something like cleaner air ducts.
Yeah.
Do you want your ducts clean?
Yeah.
I always say, no, thanks. We already had it done. And I'm lying.
My mom or my sister.
I'm totally lying because my ducts are probably dirty as hell. You know, I don't know. It just seems so awful that you're calling me during my dinner time. That's old guy talk right there. That's old guy talk.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, you kids with your duct cleaning business, running your diesel duct cleaning business outside. Oh man, you have what is it? Your Bob Marley cover thing, right?
Yeah. I've been doing that it's crazy. The time has flied and like flown by. I've done that started that with Matt Drake in like 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is crazy. I think it was around that. Yeah, that sounds about right. Anyways, was that really a long ass time.
Just like a side project from the cells, right? So you just keep busy. Yeah. And it's completely different.
That was just, it was just strictly like, literally just started. My wife was working at a music production place that had great parties for their staff and thought of the idea. She was putting a show together, like a party for them, and wanted to, one of the guys was like, oh, get Darren and a buddy to just come and play some Bob Marley songs. Mm-hmm. I was like, cool. Yeah, that'd be fun. And oh, they want to pay us that. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Great. Cool. Let's go. Let's go perform for these guys and do something. Yeah. And brought my buddy Matt from Dodger. He's also now.
Oh, I know Matt.
Psycho. Matt Drake.
Yeah, I know Luke Sumo really well. Luke Muldoon. Luke Muldoon. Yeah, he is a friend of mine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Luke even played a couple shows with Bob Marley before. So Matt and I just started this acoustic thing. Then we brought in on that show this guy, Luke Kinman, from a band that was around, a ska band that was around called Scratch 3 for a little bit because he could play a mean steel pan. So we're like, that'd be cool. Add that to it as well. The night went over so well. We're like, let's do some more shows. Brought a bass player in. Ton of different guys have filled those shoes. Most recently, this guy Frank Diaz, who's in Listowel, I met through some guys in Stratford, is playing with us. The bass player in Scratch 3, Luke Kinman's band, has played with the band most of the time. Phil Flashlight Brown played a few shows back in the day with us on bass. And then we've had Stefan Sesniak, who was with Grindig, and he's played with Hoxley Workman, a bunch of other bands. He played drums with us for a while, but our main guy who's usually with us is Mark Raposo, who's mainly from, you know him from the Pocket Dwellers.
Oh, yeah.
He's their main guy.
I toured with them once.
Deadly.
Yeah.
Deadly stuff. I'm on a Pocket Dwellers tune on their Blue Note record, the last record they put out.
Oh, cool. I tour managed them.
Hook on the track.
I tour managed them in the early 2000s across Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good people.
Yeah, man. And then we've got like Chris Fatty Collins from Cheap Suits, and he's played keys with I Mother Earth for a while. Not anymore, but a bunch of different, most like reggae and rock bands out of Peterborough. That's where he's from. Okay. Plays keys with us. And we all just have a wicked time and play a handful times throughout the year. Whenever I don't have as much time these days to really push the band and sell the band, and I like it when it's more random. We kind of get together from our own main schedules. We've all got a lot of other things on the go, so when we can get together, it's just a good time. We have fun, and then you get to play a show at the same time. Most of those tend to pop up in February, which is creeping up on us really soon, because February 6th is Bob Marley's birthday, so we try to just do all the weekends in that month and whatever we can do. Yeah, a lot of fun shows popping up over the next little while for that one.
Any Salads shows?
Not a whole lot of Salad stuff. You know what's going on there? Salads, so you know how Pfeiffer was drumming with us for like 7 years, did their Music Every Day record with us that we put out a couple of years ago. That's kind of our, in our eyes, our piece de resistance. You know what I mean? That's our pride and joy. That's
Zeppelin 4.
Our shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so with Pfeiffer moving back to LA, we've been just sort of struggling with the drummer piece. Grant has filled in on some shows, our original drummer. When Pfeiffer comes back into Canada, he's done some shows. We did a few shows with a buddy of Dave, our guitar player's. His name is Courtney, which has been fun, but a real different vibe, and in just a bunch of different ways, good and bad. Mm-hmm. And we're also doing a lot of different stuff. Chuck is becoming really busy with I Mother Earth, as they're playing a lot of shows and require a lot of his time. He plays with a lot of different bands, actually, though, too. He just sort of has been a hired gun and just really keeps busy there. Mm-hmm. Where Dave is really in his own world and next to impossible to get a hold of for both Chuck and I these days. Sort of becoming a bit of a recluse, for lack of a better term. Yeah. And so it's a weird one, but there certainly is no closing to the whole chapter of what's going on with the Salads just yet now. It's more or less taking a rest, figuring out where things are at. I think my plan is to do a lot of writing this year. I think we all just kind of need to pull back a little bit and do our own things and spend more time for ourselves, where we can then write a lot of stuff and bring that back to back to the table, and just kind of, you know, refresh things and get some new tunes back out there. But the Salads really get going when there's been some kind of a inspirational kick in the ass to all of us collectively. Mm-hmm. Is the best way I can describe it. When we were doing those Dean Blundell Sausage Fest shows for a long time,
definitely, yeah.
That really kept us moving, because each time that one of those shows would pop up, we would make a point of learning a bunch of new stuff or writing a bunch of new stuff for the show.
Yeah.
To really just like...
You were the house band. Essentially, you were the house band, yeah.
And just blow them up right off the top of the show. And that's why they would keep having us there every time. And so when Dean was done, that... we really felt that as well too. And then Pfeiffer moving to LA, it was just kind of a Chuck joining in with I Mother Earth, me moving to Stratford, even though we were all in different cities anyways, just kind of slowed the whole machine down a little bit, or just made it try to, we've got to shift it and figure out which track we go on.
I think, I think if I may make an observation, I think you guys are so pushed in the middle part of your careers that there's nothing wrong with pushing back and saying, we don't need to do it. We're not going to do it until we want to do it. And when we do it, it's going to be better, because it's going to be on our terms.
Exactly. And that's kind of what we did with the Music Every Day record that we just put out a couple years ago. Put in Angelo Moore from Fishbone on the title track there, working with Dave Wilcox, because Dave and Chuck were both guitar teching for him at the time too. Chuck still does. Having Brian Byrne from My Mother Earth on that same song, we were playing a couple shows with the bands like the Johnstones, who are just a fun kind of party band to tour with. They're a blast to tour with. So Ryan, their lead guy, got on a track on there. And we just had fun with the record. That record was a blast, and we recorded it by ourselves. It took us 5 years to do it, so we did just that. We did it on our own terms, you know what I mean? Yeah. Nobody was pushing us. We really took our time with it. And I think we were so proud of that record. But then it just kind of, it came out. We didn't really push it. There was no big machine to promote it for us, or not promote it. But in the best way I can describe that record is like, we did it for ourselves. It was kind of like a summary of everything that we learned over our career, and finally putting some, you know, close friends of ours that are, you know, bigger, more successful musicians than us even, or even more of the public eye, however you want to see it, on some tracks and collaborating with them, doing some weird shit that we couldn't do before. Like even that track that we have with Wilcox and Brian is a weird tune. It's not what you would expect to hear both of those guys on a song. It's a really bizarre song that on the drop of a hat goes from like a blasting metal tune to a ska tune. We like the working title for that song was Metal Ska for the longest time. Cause it just, it's like, it's a really weird, almost Mr. Bungle kind of a style tune.
Yeah.
But we were able to do that cause nobody was telling us what to do. And you know, Dave and Chuck worked on it most of the record in Dave's basement. So Dave could go down there any time of the day he wanted to and be the perfectionist that he is and sit in his underwear and a bowl of nachos and just work until his eyes bugged out.
Yeah.
But that was the other downside of it too. It's the upside is that you could create that perfect record.
There's no alarm clock going off saying, okay, boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He could do everything he wanted to do, but it also created such a crazy record that, Dave was like, never again. He's like, as much as I enjoy doing that, it will take 5 years. You know what I mean? If you, if you let it do that. And, it's nice to sometimes have somebody else do all of that engineering work and all the technical stuff.
You're right. There's a fine line between like creating magic and then having magic for magic's sake. And then trying to then, okay, this is magic. How can I make it more magic? You know what I mean? Like, that is a tricky road, and it's a bit of a trap because that's how we have computers that record stuff, and we have computers that can make things sound different, you know, different for the sake of, for the, sometimes good and sometimes bad, right?
Yeah.
But the whole original idea is, I did an episode with Ron Hawkins from Lois and Low. Yes. And Do Good Assassins, and he tells me how he records is he actually doesn't, he destructively records. He doesn't keep anything. He treats Pro Tools like it's a tape machine. So when he records, he's recording over something, and it's never to be heard again.
Crazy.
Because I think he's gone in that trap where he doesn't fall into that trap anymore where I have all these great ideas. Let's try them all. Right.
Yeah.
And then
plus in the day and age of where there's a lot of posthumous stuff, maybe thinking like, who's going to dig up all these old tapes and release some shit that were just outtakes and put together.
I think absolutely. And the trick is that you have too much to choose from now. Yeah. And that is a trap that you can fall into real easy. And I think that's why it takes 5 years is because you sit somewhere and you go, I think I can make this better. I think I can make this better.
Yeah.
And whether you do or not is irrelevant at the end of it all, because people like us listening to stuff in our iPods are like, it sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that work you put into it is like, well, didn't you catch that nuance, that little thing that only I heard?
Nobody.
Believe me,
I
have fallen into that trap big time. So
yeah, seriously. I feel like there's so much on that record that only we really have heard and know that's from a band perspective. And it's still sort of I'm comfortable with thinking that maybe years down the road, even long after I'm gone, that record will surface and someone will go, holy shit, how come nobody knew about it? It's because we didn't do anything with it. We just recorded this record that we feel is the best thing we've ever done, and it's so crazy in so many respects. And that, and it's not just us thinking that. Other people have told us the same thing and see what we mean by on a production level, on a you know, guest level, celebrity guest level, and just the whole package is like really crazy. But we just sort of, here you go.
Yeah.
Just put it out on iTunes and let it be available, but they didn't tell a whole lot of people on a grand scale.
I think it takes time for something to sit with people.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. There's something to be said about that, that I feel in a way I can't even explain.
No. And it still goes down to the honest feeling that if it's good, it's good. And and it will find its audience.
Yeah, exactly.
It might take some time. And we're in this age now where everything is put out all the time, that it's so hard to choose what we like. Mm-hmm. There's so many subsects of music now where it used to be, it was punk or hardcore, right? And now there's so much more.
So much. Yeah, it's crazy.
If you want to go on iTunes and hear Aboriginal log drumming from New Zealand on iTunes...
you can find that.
You can find it,
and for free if you want. You know, it's funny. Check this one out. This one surprised me the other day. I bought. Actually, I have some records here that I pulled out. I'm like, if we start talking, when we get to a point where we start talking records, and stop talking about our own bands. I got a record the other day that had a download card in it, and I found out about the album because I originally bought it a digital copy on iTunes, and then was like, I need to have the record. Get the record, and the download card, in this case, is useless to me. Mm-hmm. So I call up Chuck. I'm like, hey, you want this? I think you might dig this record. Let me send you the card. Oh, don't worry about it. I subscribe to the Apple. He subscribes to Apple Music streaming thing. He's like, I have the whole world of music at my fingertips, and give it to somebody else who wants that copy.
Right.
Physical, digital copy to have it. He's like, I don't care for it. Mm-hmm. And I went through about three people that had the exact same answer as him until finally finding somebody that's like, oh, I don't stream. That'd be great. I'd love to hear that. Whoa. It's a struggle. I was having a struggle trying to give away a digital copy of an album to somebody.
Yeah.
Because everybody's streaming now.
Funny sort of
realization.
Yeah, I think the whole idea of owning something is pretty cool. But people don't think that way yet, where they haven't really made digital something that's worthy of owning it. They've tried.
No.
They've tried. Yes. Like, you know, when iTunes came out, that was the biggest step towards making music a viable purchase, whether it be, you know, in the digital domain. You feel like you own it because they really made efforts on artwork, and they kind of tried to bring back old album stuff, and it didn't, you know, it's still not there yet, you know, like I've changed my ways because when I found out about Napster and I found out about LimeWire and then Pirate Bay, actually not so much Pirate Bay, but I was downloading music for free for a good 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is amazing. And then I became that person that was putting out music and trying to sell it.
To people. Same. Right? I so many musicians, myself included, I was in the same shoes.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, I can get this and that song for free or that album. Great. That was such a weird time, eh? They're just because that sort of split of releasing music and being a fan of music as well. But it's made the MP3 and that digital copy so invaluable.
Yes. And now the idea now though that if I might change the world of digital downloaded music, I think the idea and what they're trying to do, and I don't think they're doing very well, is make it impossible, make it really hard to download the free thing. Or you can actually watermark things. If they can make a Bitcoin out of nothing, that's a number that's as long as my arm, a calculation, right? You can actually attach a code to any song all the time. Like, we have a limitless number count because we have both numbers and we have alphabets. So your song could be number X234Z backwards R, whatever. But that's one song. And the next one is just one digit away or a different, you know. Why don't they just make it really hard, you know?
Yeah.
What is the idea? Like, so the industry needs to turn itself around and say, if we really want to solve this problem, I'm sure we can. It's gotta be, right?
And I think the best thing happening to the music industry right now are these guys.
Never heard of them.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I have a like crazy collection of CDs. There's only some of them over in the corner there. And that was what I was. That's what I collected for the longest time until MP3s muddled up my thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like,
you're back to vinyl.
Yeah, back to vinyl because I ultimately am also hugely engulfed in the world of packaging music and the artwork and love that side of things. Mm-hmm. Love the tangible aspect of holding and seeing, being able to read the liner notes, all that good stuff. And then once you're a dad and creating your own human beings, I want the same for him. Mm-hmm. As much as he may not really understand the value of that or care too much, there's a lot of like, oh, dad's putting a record on. Yeah, you put it on for me. Like, he knows how to put on a record since he was two.
And the idea of, like you said, you hit it on the head, is holding it in your hand is much more important. But unfortunately, all of us can't do that, you know? And I was talking, who was I talking to yesterday? I was talking to, who was I interviewing yesterday? God damn it. Hold on. Jim Bryson.
Right.
I was interviewing Jim Bryson and I said, I've completely lost my train of thought now. Bring me back.
We're talking about physical copies of music.
Right. The point was, when I'm walking in the woods with my earbuds on, listening to iTunes,
uh-huh,
I could never recreate that feeling in the woods listening to my favorite song if I had a record. I would have the record in my hand. I'd be looking at it.
But right.
I'd be in the woods. Totally. I wouldn't be able to play it. There's this visceral feeling of owning and feeling like, okay, I'm in this moment now. And that's where we need to sort of change our point of view.
I agree
with you. Holding on to an album. I used to love opening up the gatefolds.
Maybe that's part of it too, I completely hear you on that side because I listen to music in all those different formats for all those reasons. But maybe just the one thing that I kind of, maybe that's part of it too, is that the physical copy helps you get immersed into the record. Where often we'll put something on and a song is passed or a record's done or it's onto a different one and not until something drastic happens in the music or something catches your attention, do you really start paying attention to it again.
When you're holding an album
and listening to it, and you're immersed into the package of what they've given you, knowing that you're going to be looking at this the same time as you're listening to it.
That's right. You've created a moment, and your moment is either headphones on or the record player's over there. You're in your room. You're listening to your records.
Yeah.
And then your head can now take over where you're at. It takes you into a different place because you're listening to the music so well and you have a good listening device and your albums sound great.
Yeah.
But
I've always really heavily appreciated those albums that, particular albums that had detailed collages on them, where you could sit, listen to the music and get lost in the artwork and be like, wow, like Jane's Addiction Ritual de lo Habitual album cover or Sublime's album covers were that artist that,
the 40 Ounces of Freedom and all that.
Even the Long Beach Double All-Star albums, the crazy like tattoo detailed stuff. I love that kind of stuff. And the music really reflected that to me. And they sort of went hand in hand. And I can't imagine them one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like a video with a song. Once you sort of see the video, you see when you hear the song down the road and you've seen the video, you see the imagery from that video when you hear the song.
That's true. Now, do you ever get this moment? Because I listen to podcasts in the car, and then I start thinking, and I start forgetting what I'm listening to. You know what I mean? Like your head sort of takes over of what your inner conscious or whatever you're thinking about, your inner voice.
Yes.
And then I'm like, well, what are they talking about? You know what I mean? So
sometimes your surroundings can distract you from the music as much as it can allow you to get more immersed into your surroundings. Like you're saying, like listening to a song outside is different from inside because of your surroundings.
Yeah,
you're allowing yourself to see.
But how do you engineer an album that will be good? I don't know. I guess they make albums that sound good in the woods. They got it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Check that out on iTunes. This music sounds good in the woods.
We made this record so it would sound good in the forest.
We made it in the woods.
Only in the forest.
In the woods. We made it in the woods. So you'll actually smell the oak of the woods while we're.
Well, you can smell it in the packaging if you have the physical copy of the record. Oh, shit.
They can do that, you know? They can play music and vibrations that make you smell things. I wonder if someone
will. Check this out. Yo, check this out. Here, this is a perfect example of this. So just this week or last week, a new Massive Attack release came out. I just happened to stumble upon this. They put out four songs, an EP of songs, and they're going to release it in normal iTunes and whatever, the original versions of those songs. But they've also released it with a... I'm just going to pull it up on my phone right now so I can kind of tell you exactly what's going on, because it's crazy. It's a sensory music experience that they've released the album in an app format. So the app asks to tap into all these features that your phone may have. One, the GPS tracking system. The app has these four songs and allows you to remix the songs and listen to the songs based on all of these features that you can get through the phone. So you click on a song title and it starts to play, but what you're watching is coming through your camera. So they've asked to access your camera, and your camera is on like sort of a filter. It really only picks up on brighter things. You touch the screen and like this squiggly fingerprint goes across the screen. It asks to tap into your GPS so that it knows your location and the time of day. The music changes based on that as well.
Wow.
Like if it's more nighttime, I guess maybe it's slower or earlier, more up-tempo. If you have one of those, I don't have one, I don't know much about it, but like Apple Watch.
Yeah. Get your heartbeat.
Senses your heartbeat and movement and all that sort of stuff. It will run the BPM to your heart, to your pulse rate as well. So when you listen to these songs at different times of day on different days, it's completely different each time.
You know, tried that.
That's a crazy idea. It's another interesting way to interact the user with your music.
You know, tried that, and I don't know if it succeeded or not. It was Bjork did that a couple of years ago.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me.
She put out an app, and it was like I don't think it was necessarily attached to the album. I think it had parts of the album in it that you can manipulate with your finger. So there'd be like stars, and you can move the stars around, and then it changes the music when you're like playing the phone that's playing her music that you can then, and it's like it's all these different constellations that you can fly to, and every week there was a new update that took you to a different part of the constellation, which was a different song. And I thought that was a neat way to present music, and whether you could interact with it or not, it's giving you this sensory feeling that it's using technology. And she always did that, even since debut, would put out albums that felt like humans played, but they were computers playing all this music. So
I love that sort of stuff and different. I think that as things change, there's always tons of different ideas. Even, you know, things that we've had forever, there's got to be something that somebody hasn't thought of, a way to put out music or just have people involved to create a moment that they, you know, won't forget that's connected to your music.
I was trying to pitch this. Who was I talking? I can't remember who I was talking to, but I thought, what if you just made a concert in your living room? People have done it. I mean, Neil Finn used to do it a lot. He used to do webcasts, and he used to play music in his living room to people who were listening in on, I can't remember even what the group chat was. It might have just been AOL group whatever. But he was way ahead of the curve by just playing music in his living room to the audience that was listening. And I think now we have like things like Periscope and Blab, another part of Periscope, and it's where people can now interact with the outside world but still have that intimate feeling that you're watching this person create something. And I think Periscope is the best part. And if you ever want to see a great riot, go on Periscope. But at the same time, there's people out there playing their guitars. And whether they're good or not, you can sit in and watch and watch this person make music. It's quite magical, really.
Yeah. You know? That's super cool. There's so many things like that. And I feel like we don't even know the half of them. I've not heard of those before.
Yeah. It's awesome. It takes a lot to change one's, like, the world's music perspective, right? Think where we came from the 50s. That wasn't too long ago, right? And TV was live. You know what I mean? Like live TV. Like we were treating it like a show. And now here we are in things. We have a million channels. We've flown to the moon. We have satellites up in space that watch us and can make phone calls for us. Like, you know, these are things that we can do now. Yeah. But if you said in like 1952 that we would be talking not through a phone, but we would be talking over computer at
through a computer
next to what's a computer? Oh, is that the thing that creates that sorts the mail for us? Like, you know, it's like, no, it's a thing that people have. All of us have these things now, you know?
Yeah.
We've come so far. Think about another 50 years from now. Where we are going to be, I don't know, like, where are we going? And it takes big changes to make, big happenings to make big change, right? And what's that change going to be? Like, where are we going to have our next big, where are we going to have our next Beatles? When are we going to have our next Rolling Stones? Like,
well, that's scary too, eh? See, watching all of this, these plethora of musicians drop off now, and I can only help but think, it's just that time. From that time where the legends were created, they're now dying off because everybody does, and it's just that time for them.
Yeah.
When that ends,
except for Keith Richards,
that's when we really need to be scared.
Yeah.
When they stop dying.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody else to really miss.
Definitely.
Go back to listen to again.
Yeah. Like, think about. Oh, when Bowie died, like it took me a long time to realize that. And someone posted this graceful post on Facebook or whatever and said, think how awesome it is to be alive in a time when Bowie was alive. Because in 40 years from now, he will be our Jesus. He'll be somebody's Jesus. He will be the person that completely turned the music. Because,
like, the Kurt Cobain.
The myth, the legend, you know? Yeah. But with dignity and class, you know what I mean? Like, that's another thing. Like, David Bowie always had a different way of looking at music. And, you know, now he's dead. Now he's gone. He won't be able to create music anymore. Well, we're lucky enough to watch at least 30 years of his career. You know, like, I don't know. When I got into Ziggy Stardust, it was in the 80s, right? So it took me a long time. And then when Let's Dance and Modern Love and all that came out, then I was hooked. Like, Bowie, right? My wife... like, cried when I told her that David Bowie died. She's like, no, like, you know, this is the effect. You know what I mean? One person had on people. Will we get that again? Will it? Do we?
It's a tough one to think about.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You know,
I don't want to be the oldish old guy again.
I don't want to Bieber bash, but I hope it's not just a Bieber. Speaking of Stratford.
Yeah. And he flies over once in a while and lands in here.
Do you have Bieber Road yet? Like Justin Bieber Road? Is there
No. But there's like his grandparents are like right next to the airport that he kind of flies right into.
Okay.
Stratford Airport. So he's got a lot of privacy to be able to come in town. When he's seen and he's in the papers and stuff, it's because he's chosen to do so and just go walk downtown so that everybody makes a scene.
Well, the kid's he's really talented. I don't want to bash him, but
no, exactly. I can't either. He's done a lot of good things, and
he seems
my wife keeps saying he seems to be turning around, you know, he's doing really good. Everybody loves the new record, and again, but you know, you and I have different opinions because we've been in the industry and we know.
I think the best thing he ever did was play with him and that guitar player, like, live acoustically. Because old people like us went, holy crap, the kid can sing. I always thought he could sing.
Yeah.
You know, there he goes. Look at him dance. No. Well, you know, as long as they don't shame him like they did Shania Twain, because everybody up in Timmins hates Shania Twain. I don't know why.
Oh, really? There's that much hostility towards
her? I don't know why. What's wrong with her?
She's not done half the stuff that Bieber's done wrong.
No, she never peed in the mop bucket. Or maybe she did. We just don't know. Up in Timmins.
She never spit on her fans.
She never like wrote in the Anne Frank book about being a Belieber. That was funny. I mean, it's funny for the wrong reasons, but my gosh. You wouldn't think there'd be people
who never hooked up with Selena Gomez.
She had Mutt Lang. At least she, you know, Mutt being the operative word.
She didn't fly in a plane with her dad smoking pot.
Oh, man.
If she did, she'd be a hell of a lot cooler if she did.
I think Shania's great. I think she's great. Yeah. Even though she lives in
I don't know a whole lot about her, but I bet you if I was chatting with her, I'd think she's a pretty hip lady.
She probably has more rock and roll stories than both of us combined.
Yeah, seriously. Man,
you know?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I'm running out of stories, man.
I know it's getting late, man. I know. I really appreciate you doing this, man. Anytime you want to come on the show and talk, this is the show, man. This is just people.
Hey, this is a blast. Hey, and I, you know what? I should pick your brain for some tunes and stuff like that one of these days, because I've got, you know, about the Nice Time theme radio show.
Oh, look at that. Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
That's little me. So I made a bunch of business cards to start throwing them around more than just online. But that's just this. There's a local guy who lives in Toronto now who has svpradio.com. And when he decides to, he puts up like plays shows, and he's a DJ and has a hip hop show. And I do this one. It's on every Wednesday, but I do one a month at 8 o'clock. And then after the episode plays every Wednesday of that month, it goes to my Mixcloud page, and then just do a new one. And each show is an hour long, about an hour. Mm-hmm. And there's a theme to them. So I just pick a random theme and play all kinds of music that I dig based on that theme. And I've been doing it for like 2.5 years now.
Really?
Yeah, I'm loving it. It's so good.
How do you get by with, like, because I know that podcasts, you can't play a lot of music, copyrighted music on it. People get mad. And they shut you down.
Oh, yeah?
But you have no problem, right? Like, playing any music you want? There's no, like...
I can play anything. I've never had any problem. We have complete control over everything we play.
That's great.
And, it's amazing. There's listeners all over the world tuning in just, again, by chance. It's one of those just labors of love, almost like the Salads Music Every Day record. Mm-hmm. We kind of just did it for ourselves. I do this because I love to share music that I found with other people, and putting a theme to it kind of just gives me another challenge to fine tunes. And then I end up finding the connection between some songs. I'm like, oh, that song could even mix into this song, and whatever. Just have fun with it. And hope that somebody else listens to it and finds a song that they love on there. And,
well, yeah, you'll have to send me the link, and I'll put it in the description when I release the episode, which won't be for a couple of weeks from now. But
cool.
Definitely I'll put that in there, because that sounds really cool. And
how
about Darren and Darren shows? Because you and Darren Pfeiffer had a podcast.
Yeah.
And I remember I came on board, and I'm like, and then that was it. It was gone.
Yeah. It kind of stopped when he moved to L.A.
Well,
he wanted to keep doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
He did want to keep doing it, and I was kind of – but. Again, we had so many other things on the go, and we didn't figure out the technical side of it. We had technical problems when we were in the same fucking room. there was like a couple times where we just didn't even do the show because there's problems with his laptop or whatever.
Something,
and I'm
breaking,
like, man, I can't even. And now he has the Dangerous Darren show that he does with another dude in LA. He has a blast with that. Once that stopped, I just needed to do something else, and I started up the Nice Time theme radio show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've been having so much fun with it. It's good.
Because Darren was on the show last year, and we were talking about that, and now is a better time. Like, here we are having a conversation. And all you have to do is record your voice onto a microphone, and we have the same room vibe. Like, it sounds like, you know, and it sings that couldn't, like, in radio people, when, like, radio folk had, like, their own control room in their house, and then they would send it out by fiber optic cable or whatever. Like, we're good now. Like, we could do this, you know? And I think you guys could do that. If you reboot that show, because I remember I got into it like two episodes and it was done. I was like, God damn it.
You know what? All those episodes are online too. Like, yeah. I've tried to, you know, archive a lot of that stuff. So it's still, you can find it through it on my site, DarrenDumas.com. I have tons of links through there. Even just searching it on Facebook, you'll find some links somewhere. But yeah, my Nice Time Theme radio show, I put most of the social promo stuff through Facebook.
Cool.
And then the show airs on SVPradio.com. And all of the old episodes are on Mixcloud.com.
Well, I should pick your brain about that, because I've been trying to do this live show and I've been trying to find the proper medium to do it. And does it cost money?
To put on what?
Oh, on your show. Does it cost you money? No.
Nothing. Oh, hey, if you wanted to put your show, I would totally talk to Dylan over at SVP. He's always looking for new shows.
Amazing.
And if there's connection already with people he's already working with, and you're just like, you have a show and you send it to him to put on, he'll just tell you, or you pick a time slot if it's going to be something to go on regular. Yeah, he's a great and easy guy to work with.
I'm thinking about 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, when I just wake up.
I can only give you like 4 in the morning till about 7.
You know that part where people usually die in car crashes? That time when they're driving all night? That's the time I'm going to give you.
Yeah. But you know, that's the nice thing about online radio too, is you can say whatever the hell you want and anybody can access it from their phones.
Oh yeah, that's the new, definitely, it's, and what you're doing is going to take over from where Sirius tried, you know.
Yeah.
And it would,
I'm just stoked to kind of have, like, not only have them put out on the station and help the station out and do things through there, but archiving them as well. Mm-hmm. That's what was a big thing for the Darren and Darren show with me. I'm like, who knows where Pfeiffer's going down the road, but at this point in our lives, like, we're together. We get together once a week or once every other week anyways with a backpack full of CDs. Like, look what I got. Look what I got. You know, listen to this. Mm-hmm. Let's record it when we do that and just go back and forth and make a show out of it. That's how that came to be. And again, like I'm saying, this new show is just so I can share music with people. And even I'm very conscious of the idea of, even long after I'm gone, these shows are up there for people to listen to, or my son or other family and friends to listen to. And I'm still sharing music with them. Yeah. You know?
And who knows where we're going to be in 10 years time with actual, how music's filtered and sorted. Cause you know, it won't just be, I like dudes with goatees talking about reggae music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, that's a hard filter, but in 10 years from now, it'll be like, you know what I mean?
It,
like,
might be that specific. Absolutely.
Here's what you want, you know? So now, like,
guy with a goatee in Canada.
Stratford, Ontario. Not that one. Not that guy.
Yeah.
I mean the west side of Stratford. Sorry. My bad. Oh man. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I feel like we are cutting it short, even though this is one of the longer episodes I've done, but I want to make sure. Yeah.
We should give prizes to anybody who listens to the whole show.
Well, yeah, let's give a code word. what's our contest word?
They can go to, tell them to go to the Nice Time Theme Radio Facebook page, and I'll give them one of my free digital downloads that I from all these records that I have. I've got like a stack of these things, man.
Tell them. Well, we need a safe word though that say that. What's the safe word? Like, not like
the safe word.
The safe word saying, because anybody could say, like, hey, I'm here for the free music, but we need to have a safe word. Coffee cup. That's the safe word. So the first coffee person cup that goes to your website and types in coffee cup, they get, I'll throw in a t-shirt, because I got t-shirts.
Well, how do we prove that they listen to the whole show?
Well, they have to say coffee cup. That's the safe word. Don't you ever do sadomasochistic stuff like
that? What if you only listen to the end of the show? I guess not everybody's gonna do that.
Then they're not gonna say coffee cup, because that's the code word. See?
I'll give them three Salads albums.
Whoa. You know
digital
what I
downloads.
Got? I got a Foursquare album called Dial 9 for a Line that I will throw in that's released in Germany
physical
only.
Physical copies?
Physical.
I'm not giving physical, just digital.
Okay, I'll give you... I'll give you the whole discography of Foursquare on digital download. 50 songs.
I'll match your discography and give the whole Salads discography.
Whoa! And a t-shirt. I'll give you a digital download of a t-shirt.
Yeah.
That will work. No, but seriously, coffee cup, folks. First person coffee to put cup. Coffee cup is the... Because I have a coffee cup in front of me. That's the, I'm not making this up.
Perfect.
Awesome, man. Thanks. Darren Dumas, everybody. How was that? Wasn't that fun? Thank you so much, Darren, for doing the show. I really appreciate it. It's dudes like that that kind of make me feel good about being a musician. Just a down-to-earth, solid dude. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. Thanks to FetchClass.com. Thanks to InsightRecorders.com. Fetch Class, you know the deal. It's a place to go learn stuff in a video conference. Insight Recorders is a place to send your music and have it mixed by a professional. Banggood.com, through the Appalog.ca site, you'll see all these affiliate programs. Banggood.com, Musician's Friend, and Amazon are all places and all links to bookmark. And every little bit counts. You're supporting the show out huge. Plus, my parents are in the States, and the Canadian Amazon affiliate links, it's down for some reason. My parents are in the States. But the ironic part is that the American one's picking up. How about that? Thanks, Mom and Dad, for shopping on Amazon. Everybody else can do it, too. It's not just my parents. Don't forget apolog.ca/shop to buy a t-shirt, my discography, and pre-order the acoustic album that might actually come out one day. Tell you what, if three people pre-order the album within the next month, I'll finish it and have it done within the month. Okay, how about that? Patreon.com/Appalog is the place to go pledge to the show a monthly amount. Little as much as you want really helps the show out. Facebook.com/ApologPod is a place to go like the show and catch up on information that's happening with the show, with the news and whatnot. Follow me at SimonHead66 on Twitter. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. Next week, I don't know who's next week, but I can say, yes, it's Cale Madison. Cale Madison is, oh my God, he's up for an award. He's gotten a Juno for Video of the Year. Isn't that great? And he's on the show next week. I'm looking forward to it because kid's half my age and he knows more about music industry than I do. So, everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. I'll see you here next week. Ta-ta.